Let's look in Genesis. Let's go to Genesis 16 today. We're going to talk some more about Abraham's faith, the faith of Abraham. It's a big subject, and it covers a lot of ground, and you can't just hit it and go on, and it's just, or you just don't get anything out of it. I think that's the problem with a lot of preaching and reading and studying and everything, Bible reading. Everybody just skips the surface just like a rock skipping across the lake. They don't get no deeper than... I start studying and thinking about it, and the more that I do, the deeper it gets, and it just gets to where I don't even know which way to turn to cut it off and which way to focus on this or that. But Abraham is growing in faith, and he has to learn some hard lessons, and his faith is, he's the father of us all. We read that a week or two ago. And that's concerning our faith. He is the example of faith. The first one given in the Bible as the kind of faith that we must have. The difference in Abraham's faith is, one of the marks of Abraham's faith is that it was enduring faith. And that's what you got to have. And that's what I've got to have. Not faith that never stumbles, not faith that ever falters, but faith that endures. We're going to read some stuff here this morning about Abraham. And it's just like this. It's just up and down. It's a high place where he meets with God and has a personal encounter with God. And each one is more awesome, more intimate, more real. God's revealed more to him each time that God comes to him and speaks to him. But after each time God comes and speaks to him, it's right back down to the valley again. Seems like. And it's that way in our lives. I'll tell you, that's the way it works. When you think you're on the top, you better get ready. You're fixing to go over the hill and down again. I don't know why it's that way. I don't know why it has to be that way. I don't think it has to be that way. But I think that just our human nature and our infirmities, it's just part of the process of learning faith. Maturing faith. To get to the place where it is all in all. Where God is all in all. Genesis chapter 16. There's just 16 verses, so let's read them. You can't just pull them out. I'm going to pull a few out here as we go later, but we got to read it to get the story. Now, Abraham just came. The last thing we read was the encounter with God, the sacrifice, the revelation to Abram about his seed being captive in a country or in Egypt for 400 years and all this. But then the promises, unto thy seed have I given this land. From the river of Egypt unto the great river Euphrates. Boy, that's a big, it's a lot more than what they got right now over there. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, well, here we go, bare him no children. And she had a handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee go in unto my maid, that it may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. You shouldn't have done that, Abram. Didn't you listen? Didn't you hear about Adam? What was the thing that got him in trouble? Because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband, Abram, to be his wife. That's just unbelievable, ain't it? Can you imagine such a thing? And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. Well, what do you think was going to happen? And Sarai said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid unto thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And the angel of the Lord found her. By a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence comest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Return to thy mistress, and submit thyself unto her hands. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and shalt call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. And he will be a wild man, his hand will be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Don't you know that hurt her heart? And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, Thou God seest me. For she said, Have I also here looked after him that seeth me? Wherefore the well was called Beer Lehairoi. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And Hagar bare Abram a son. And Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abram. Lord, help us now. I pray you'd bless the message and make it clear. Lord, we sure need your help. Pray you'd be with us and exalt yourself and teach us this morning about faith in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, Abram's got to learn to walk by faith and not by sight. This is part of the process of faith, developing faith, maturing faith. He's got to learn to keep his hands off of what God's doing and not try to help God out by making things happen himself. You're going to learn that lesson. If you're going to have any kind of faith and if you're going to ever progress in faith, you're going to face the same thing. Keeping your hands off of it. Quit scheming, quit planning, quit formulating, thinking how that you can help God out to make it happen. This is a stage of the growth of faith that's common to us all. And to try to figure out how God is going to accomplish His will in our life is going to lead to our putting our hands on it every time and trying to make it happen. I'm telling you, that's what will happen. If we sit around and start looking at the horizon and looking all around and looking for signs of its coming, we're going to start monkeying with it. And we're going to start putting our mind to it and our hands to it. And we're going to do something to help him out. Because it looks like it ain't going to happen unless I do something about it. Now that's the way it is. And that's what happened here. When our faith is immature, we're going to try to help God out by formulating our own plan to make it happen. That's a sign. That's a sure sign of immature faith. Faith that is ripe and mature will sit still and wait on God. And that's one of the things about this. That's what he's going to learn here, the hard way. Waiting is the hard part, but it's most necessary for the development of true faith. Waiting. Wait. Wait. Patiently wait. After they had patiently endured, they received the promises. See? But that's what it takes. And we're not very good at that, are we? No, what we want it now. And we don't want to wait, do we, kids? Do we, anybody? Nobody wants to wait for anything. They want everything right now. Nobody wants to wait for anything. If the fleshly realm, it doesn't matter that they don't want to wait for nothing. Nobody wants to wait for marriage anymore. Nobody wants to wait for time and work and saving money to have something. Get it now. And so that's the way it is when it comes to dealing. God's dealings with us. We don't want to wait on Him. He's God. He can do it. Why wait? What's the purpose in him just holding back and holding back? And that's part of human nature. That's just, and that's where Abram was here. And it's because of our tendency to intervene and speed up the process. Sometimes we delay the end results, don't you see? I mean, think about Moses, 40 years old. He was ready to lead them out. And he went out there and set about to do it himself with his fist and his sword or whatever he used. He killed the Egyptian. And they said, "Who do you think you are? Who made you a judge and a ruler over us?" Well, he wasn't ready. It's 40 more years. 40 more years. And Abram here, I mean, who knows if Isaac might have been born sooner. I mean, it's 13 more years now after this before God speaks to Abraham again. 13 more years. I mean, who knows if Isaac would have been born sooner if they hadn't intervened with this deal to make it happen. Well, you reckon that happens to us? Reckon we get impatient? Reckon we put forth our hand and it just delays it any some more? That's what happens a lot of times in our life and in just life here on earth. We reach out and grab something too soon and it causes what we're wanting to be put off farther. It gets farther out of our reach. It's like you reach out and you bump it and it knocks it away off out there, and then you gotta... Each time that we leave the will of God and take matters into our own hands, we sow seeds that come back later to cause us more problems. My, my. This deal right here is from Hagar, from the Egypt trip. I mean, Hagar most likely came into Abraham's household while they were in Egypt and was probably one of the maidservants that Pharaoh gave to Abraham for Sarah. And he entreated Abram well for her sake, and he had sheep and oxen and he asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And he gave them all to Abram for Sarah. That's where Hagar came from. Now she's a permanent part of their household. So that's where this thing comes from. Egypt. That's what you got down in Egypt. All that money and all those riches and all that stuff. But you got this to go along with it. You ain't going to just make a clean cut. I mean, you're going to have baggage everywhere you go. You're going to be dragging back some junk. And every time you leave the will of God. See, Abram, his decision to go to Egypt when there was a famine in the land, where he was supposed to be. I mean, he was supposed to be in the land of Canaan. And you remember, there was a famine in the land, so off to Egypt he went. It's still bringing trouble into his life. And it's the starting point for the next trial of his faith. Which is going to just bring more junk into his life. My, my. You know, we talked about how he come back from Egypt after Pharaoh had taken his wife and, you know, Lord only knows. I mean, think of what a mess that put into their minds and their life and how it fouled things. And now this. I mean, you can just think a little bit and you can begin to put things together in your mind if you just think a little bit and look a little deeper at this story. And you can understand maybe some of the motives behind this also. He attempted to avoid hardship and have a comfortable living, but it brought endless trouble into his life for years to come. I'm talking about the Egypt trip. The sojourn down in Egypt. Not only that, but it affected the human race forever. Do you understand that his trip into Egypt, picking up Hagar, and now this deal from Hagar, Ishmael. Look over there right now in Israel, in the Middle East. Do you know who all those people are that want to kill Israel? Yeah. I mean, it's affected history, the human race, forever. Abraham's decision to go down to Egypt and have a comfortable living. You think that our decisions don't have far-reaching effects and consequences? Oh, you better believe they do. So that's why we need God's guidance, and we need to know God and need to know His leading and guiding in our life and His will. Faith is strengthened by being tried repeatedly. You know, it's hard for people to put all this together. They look at this and it's Abraham and he's the father of the faithful, and they kind of put a halo on his head and think he's some kind of superhuman or super spiritual hero of some kind. And then they see all this junk in his life and say, how in the world can that be of God? Well, it's not all of God. It's the mercy of God that God works with people like us and like Abraham and like Sarah and like Hagar. I mean, boy, if there's anything that's obvious in this whole story, it's the mercy of God. How he could just look down on such a mess and say, what in the world am I fooling with somebody like this for? We can't understand how he wouldn't do that, because we would. We'd look at somebody, and when they stumble and drag around and mess themselves up like that, we just say, well, they ain't none to them. They don't mean business. They're not sincere. But see, God knows more than we do, and he can see more than we can see. And there's something in Abraham besides this junk. I mean, and God can take the things that we mess up and use them for good. He always does. And that's what makes God so wonderful. Faith is strengthened by being tried repeatedly. Our failures in it, God uses to strengthen us. It's just like that poem she put up there today. Success is failure turned inside out. That's the way it works with faith. Real faith. Because real faith endures. And that's the mark here. That's the difference between Abraham. He didn't just make his profession and then stumble along and finally just fizzle out and quit and end up wallowing around in sin somewhere. No, he persevered. He kept going. He never quit believing in spite of the messes he made and the wrong turns he made. And the bad decisions he made. And the sins that he committed. He didn't just let them throw him plumb out of the saddle. For the child of God. Now, there's always others involved in the trying of our faith. You need to remember that. This is not just me and Jesus and we got our thing going and it's just me and him and me and God. And no, you better not think that way. Guess how your faith's going to be tried? By other people. Mark it down. Look at it in the Bible. You ain't going to find it nowhere. This time Abraham's faith is tried by his wife. Moses' faith was tried by his wife. Job's faith was tried by his wife. David's faith was tried by his wife. Solomon's faith was tried by his wives. You want me to go on? Adam. How many more? Is that true? Y'all read that in the Bible? It's because a child of God is... temptation always presents itself as a shortcut to the will of God. You need to really remember that. The devil doesn't come to us with ungodly temptations to do this awful thing. I mean, that's not the primary way the devil trips us up, the children of God. That's right. Now, if you're just looking and you're lusting and you're focusing on the flesh and the fleshly things and the worldly things and the sensual things, yeah, he'll tempt you with that. But that's kids playing. I mean, we're talking about Abraham here. And we talked about Moses there a minute ago and David and all the temptations that come. It's a shortcut to the will of God. I hope you'll see that as we look at this for a minute. The temptation doesn't present itself as something wrong to do, but simply a faster and an easier way to do what God wants. What are they doing this for? So Abraham can have a son. So he can have seed. Because that's what God has promised him. That this is in direct opposition to the essence of faith, which is to simply trust and wait upon God. That's what faith is. To trust Him and to wait on Him. But when we start thinking about how we could do things to make it easier for God, or to do it ourselves and then give God the credit. That's the devil. That's the temptation. He's trying to get you not to trust God. He's trying to get you to cast your faith to the wind and take it in your own hands and make it happen. Many times the temptation comes at us from those who are dearest to our hearts. That's why his wife. That's why David's wife. That's why Job's wife. And all the ones I mentioned there. That's why. Moses' wife. Do you remember? God was going to kill him on the way to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. God was going to kill him in the way because he hadn't circumcised his son. And when he did, Zipporah threw it at him and said, "You're a bloody husband to me." Well, there's what the problem was, see. She didn't want it done to her little boys. And he was willing to please her. He was torn between two. Here's what God says, but this is what she wants. So, our affection for them is the factor that's most difficult to overcome. That's why most men never serve God. I'll be honest with you. It's because of their wife. That's exactly right. You better believe it. They can't take it. They can't take the opposition. They will not stand against that opposition. David did. Job did. Moses did. Abraham failed the test here. He listened to his wife. He hearkened to her. He did what she wanted. We may be willing to suffer ourselves for our faith, but to endure seeing our loved ones suffer for our faith is much harder to bear. Do you see what happened here? Sarah came to him. Maybe I'll get ahead of myself, but let me just say this first, and then we'll get into Sarah. But many times the trial of our faith comes through the attempts of others to intervene in our lives to help God's will be accomplished here. I hope you can see what's really happening here. Sarah knew what God had promised Abraham. She knew. She knew about the encounters with God. She knew about the promises of God. That's why they were where they were, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham had told her, and she knew what God had promised. And I don't have any reason to think that she didn't have confidence in Abraham and his walk with God. She knew what God had promised him, but after all these long years, and it hadn't happened, she concluded that it wasn't going to happen because of her. It's my fault. You know, that's why she said. She said, "The Lord has restrained me from bearing." You know, God's promised you seed. And up until this point, God had not made it clear that it was Sarah. He just said, "Abraham, your seed. Your seed. Thy seed." Didn't he mention Sarah? And so what are you going to conclude? Well, maybe it's not me. Maybe I'm not included in it. Maybe God means for him to have seed with somebody else. So she concluded it wasn't going to happen because of her, and she concluded she was the problem, and therefore she formulated a plan to make Abraham's hopes become reality. A surefire plan. And it was a hard thing for Abraham to deal with because she was his wife. Can you imagine what a predicament he was in? And, you know, his patient enduring for God's promises is complicated now. He's waiting on God and trusting God and knows God's promise to him, and he's waiting on God. And now this, boy, this is going to complicate all of the feelings and all of the thinking. Well, you know, God hasn't said, you're the mother. But I just assumed that because you're my wife. Think. I mean, it's complicated by him looking at her and seeing her all troubled and blaming herself and feeling like she's the problem and she's the one holding him back and she's the one that's in the way, and if he could just, you know, get around her, why, he could be all right. He could make it. So he's having to deal with that now. What am I going to do about this? And you know, I don't care what we think. It was a different time and it was a different culture when this thing happened, and it happened at a time when there was much less revelation. Now, it was not right under any culture, any time, any circumstance. But, you know, we've got to just back up here a little bit and realize where we're at, and not just condemn lightly what Abraham and Sarah did here. Because, it happened at a time when there was a lot less revelation than there is today. It's hard for us to understand this situation by comparing it to our time and our culture and our understanding and our expanded revelation that God's given for the last 3,500 years since this happened. So back off from that. Quit worrying about that. Quit trying to put your standards and your understanding on what happened here. God told us about it, and He put it in detail here in the Bible, and it happened. And it's for our admonition. And it's for our teaching to help us to understand. It seemed like a reasonable thing to do, because up until now, God hadn't made it clear that the seed of Abraham would be through Sarah, but it had only referred to his seed. And by doing this, Abraham would have seed. And since Sarah was his wife, she'd be the mother of the child in a legal respect. I mean, they were just going to get a surrogate mother and have a baby anyway. That's the way most people do nowadays. A lot of people do that. And I face resistance about this, but I don't care. I really believe I'm right about this. I believe this is what the Bible teaches. If God don't give you children, you just better abide by God's will. Instead of making it happen. You can't go use somebody else. As if it's just an inanimate object or an unconcerned thing. It is not. You can't go somewhere and get somebody else's seed out of a bank and have a baby and say it's yours. You're going to have problems. And you can't have some other woman have your baby and not have problems. Man alive, what's the matter with everybody? Why can't you just trust? This is their big mistake, don't you see? God said for years, He said, I'm going to give you a son. I'm going to give you a son. And they said, but he ain't coming. We'll have one anyway. There's a way to do this besides sitting here waiting on God. Instead of trusting God. Y'all better remember that. You girls, all of you, you get married one of these days, and if God doesn't give you children, I feel for you. And my heart will hurt for you, but you better trust God with it. There's a reason. God is all wise and He is all knowing. And if He wants you to have children, and if it's the best thing for you to have children, you'll have children. And I've seen it all through the years. People that I've known, different couples that have been married for years and years and never had children. And then just all of a sudden, God just opened the womb and they have a whole house full of children. I can give you names of people I know. But they could have just said, 2 years and no children, we got to do something. Let's adopt. Let's have a, I don't even want to get into all that, but they can have a surrogate mother, or they can go to a bank somewhere and get who knows whose seed and have a baby anyway. It's the wrong thing to do. You better take some godly counsel and don't do that. You'll be sorry. I promise you, you'll be sorry. Now, she thought she could just use her maid as a surrogate and fail to consider the soul and the feelings of this maid. I mean, she just looked at her like a thing instead of a person. She was a slave. They owned her. Pharaoh had given her to them. And she was just a maid. Oh, but she's more than a maid. You better God didn't look at her like that. God found her out there. God cared about her. He cared more about her than they did. But in their zeal to do God's will, they used somebody. And this threw them away. Man, that's the ugliest thing that happens among the people of God. And it's one of the most shameful things. And it's one of the most harmful and damaging things that happens to the work and the cause of God as people do that. I mean, how many have I known through the years have had it happen to me? Just be used by somebody to further their cause and their zeal and their work for God, that they think they're doing the will of God. Now I guarantee you, God was not in this, and He's not in any of it when you just use somebody for your own purposes, pretending you're doing the will, or deceiving yourself into thinking you're doing the will of God. I mean, even a maid cannot conceive and bear a child without emotions and strong attachments being formed. And that's what happened here. And Sarah didn't anticipate that. She didn't anticipate the complications in her relationship with Abraham and with her maid. She didn't think about that. It was just going to be a business-like deal. She'd get pregnant, have a baby, and it'd be Sarah's baby. And then just forget about it. Just keep doing the dishes, keep making the beds, keep sweeping the floor. What a foolish thing. What a foolish way to treat this matter. Intimacy and all that. She gave this maid to be Abraham's wife. That's what it says. That's why, you know, I mean, we're headed for it. You might as well get ready for it. If we can have gay marriage, we can have polygamy. How in the world can you imagine it to be any different? If I can say two men can marry, what in the world moral right or authority do they have to say that a man can't have more than one wife? But it ain't right. And I guarantee you there ain't no such thing as a happy home where you got two or three or more wives. Show me one. Show me one in the Bible. Everybody's always saying, well, boy, them men back there had multiple wives. You know, they had, look at them. Oh, yeah? You want to talk about them? Show me one that had a happy home with no trouble in it. Talk about Jacob. What about Hannah and Samuel's mother, you know, and all that? Was that a happy home? Oh no, there was fussing and fighting and bitter dissension between them. Can't be. Sarah should have knew better than this. But Sarah was feeling sorry for herself. And Sarah was thinking she was the problem. And it all looks so noble. I mean, she loves Abraham and she wants him to prosper in the Lord and have the Lord's will in his life. And she don't want to be a burden and she don't want to be in the way. But come up with a plan like this? Yeah, there was a big violation of order here by making a stranger and a servant. This girl was an Egyptian. And she was a servant. But they made her an intimate part of the family. My goodness, what a thing they did here. There's a place where we all belong. Like it or not, a servant is a servant. And a master is a master. And they're not the same. There can be affection and even love between a master and a servant, and that's very common. But not to this extreme. They crossed the line. They crossed the boundaries. Big time. It also created a natural bond between Abraham and Hagar that excluded Sarah. And that's not what she had in mind at all. She didn't see that a-coming. When a man and a woman have a child together, they've become one. It's two of them in this child. They're both in this child. They look at this child and it's Abraham's son. But it's Hagar's son. Sarah ain't got nothing to do with it. Well, that ain't how she had it pictured. That ain't how she wanted it to turn out. And it also, she felt the pangs of jealousy and envy as she watched Hagar and Abraham. Can you imagine? They're in the same house. Hagar despises Sarah. Now, because she's got a connection with Abraham that Sarah doesn't have. So Sarah's cut out of the little deal. That's the way she feels. And she is, to some extent. Even though it was all her idea, she felt excluded and wronged. And when things got in a mess, she did what happens so often. She turned the tables around on Abraham and said, "It's your fault." Is that what she did? "And Sarai said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee." Now that's what Sarah did to Abraham. Her idea, she come up with it, she got it done, and now the big mess, and she says, "It's your fault. And God's going to judge you for all this." Oh my. "I only tried to help you to be what God said you would be, and now I'm the one despised." That's it. The lowly servant has been exalted to much more than a servant, and she knows it too. She's carrying Abraham's child. She's not just a servant anymore. "What do you mean making me act like a dog around here and treat me like a dog when I'm carrying your husband's son? Don't you see how complicated that got in a hurry?" And she can't remain to bear. I mean, she can't bear to remain in a servant's place in this situation here now. She can't tolerate being under Sarah's thumb while she's carrying Abraham's child. That's why her mistress was despised in her eyes. And don't you know that she was despised in Sarah's eyes? And women, when they get against each other, they pretty mean, ain't they? And they all know about God's promises. So without a doubt, she feels that she's been, I'm talking about Hagar, she feels that she's been included in God's plan for Abraham and is carrying the promised seed upon which all the promises depend. Have you ever thought about that? Hagar's been with them for 10 years. She knows what she knows all about Abraham and God's promises and what happened here. I wonder how they approached her about this deal. I wonder whether she consented or how the deal was. Well, she understood everything that was going on. Now she's carrying the seed of Abraham, the promise of God. She's carrying it. And treat me like a dog? Like I'm nobody? So she feels like she's included in God's plan. And at the same time, Sarah's been left out of it all. She's out. Well, she thought she was the problem. She thought she was the one in the way. She thought she was what was holding up the process here. And now she's out. So that's not very good. Now, she's still barren, and now it appears that Abraham's going to have a son, but not by her. Well, that's going to be bitter. And Abram tells Sarah that Hagar is her maid, and she may deal with her as it pleases her. You know, she come to Abraham and said this, and it's your fault, and God's going to judge you. He's going to judge you harsher than me. I mean, what I did may have been wrong, but what you've done is much more wrong. I mean, it's like she looks at Hagar and sees her attention to Abraham, and she says, you know, I mean, she begins to think, you know, well, maybe he has got more involved with her heart and everything here. I mean, he's won her heart, and she's lavishing attention on him. That's what she's accusing him of. That's why she's laying so hard to his charge. You know, she's cut out. She feels like she's being jilted now for this Egyptian maid. And bitter because it was her idea to start with. And Abraham tells Sarah that it's your maid. You can do with her what you want to. So he removes himself from the problem by telling Sarah that she started it so she can figure out what to do about it. Basically. Yeah. And by doing that, he assured her that he had no affection toward Hagar as he did toward her. You're my wife. This deal was not about that. So just do whatever you want to with her. I'm not going to protect her. I mean, to the shame of both of them, they simply used Hagar as a thing and not a person. And they did it all in the name of doing God's will. But Abraham, there's no such easy way out of such a mess as this. You can't just shut the door and it's gone. You can't just pretend it didn't happen and everything's okay. No, 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 can't do that. What's done is done. Sarah dealt hardly with Hagar and made life unbearable for her, so she fled and headed back to Egypt. It's where she was headed. Sure, in the way, sure, she was headed right back to Egypt. But the angel of the Lord found her by fountain of water in the wilderness. All that's significant. Bible said, the angel of the Lord found her by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's maid, whence comest thou? He knew her. And whither wilt thou go? I mean, he called her by name. He said, where are you going? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarai. Isn't it amazing that God's showing mercy to the victim of Abraham and Sarah's folly while they showed no mercy? What a shame. The father of the faithful. Well, it don't look very good right now, does it? Isn't it amazing that God sent her back to Sarah and told her to submit herself under her hand? Y'all think about that. God is comforting her. He's speaking with her. He's manifesting himself to her. But he's not taking her part to just abandon ship and go on. No, you go back. You're a servant. You go back and submit yourself under your mistress's hand. You do what she tells you. That's some good counsel for everybody. Stay where you belong. Yeah, it's tough. But she's going to be mean to me. I can't stand it. Yeah, it's going to be tough. But that's where you belong. So go back. And I'll be with you. And I'm going to multiply your seed. You remember what he said we read a while ago? He promised her. Isn't it amazing that God made such great promises to Hagar, who was considered nothing by Abraham and Sarah and everybody else? And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, Thou God seest me. Now that sounds like a funny name to us, but that's evidently translated, you know, from those Hebrew words that meant stuff, and that's what it meant. Thou God seest me. Think about that. She's cast out. And it's not the first or last time. She's going to be cast out for good down the road here a little bit. But she's cast out through no fault of her own, really. She's a servant. I mean, she's under bondage. She's the bond woman. She was a slave. She didn't have a choice in her life about what was done. The choice was made for her. And then she was cast out. And she says, Thou God seest me. Think about that. And just think of how wonderful God is. Look at this mess. Here's Abraham and Sarah. God's chosen. I mean, Abraham. And here's the person, the victim of their folly, brought into a knowledge of God. You know, I'm thinking here, and the only time that I can think of God speaking to Sarah is when he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh. Remember? But God's speaking to Hagar here, I mean, a bunch. Telling her all kinds of stuff. Making her promises. Telling her what to do. giving her comfort. Hagar. That's the way God works too. I'll tell you right now. Sometimes the people who are in the place where everybody thinks is the fountain of everything spiritual, they're not the ones that hears from God as much as their victims do. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, Behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. God watches. He sees all things. He knows everybody. He knows everything that's going on. Don't ever forget that. God's watching this mess. He's watching this unjust thing that's done. And God's taking care of it. Oh, there's so much more. And Hagar bare Abram a son, and Abram called his son's name, which Hagar bare. What do you reckon he called him? Ishmael. God told Hagar what his name was. Hagar must have told Abraham what his name was. So Abraham must have known that God spoke to Hagar. Well, that really complicates things some more, doesn't it? And even 13 years later, when Isaac is finally born, God doesn't forget Hagar. Isn't it amazing that God would increase Abraham's faith by the sorrow he reaps from this episode of failing to trust God and make such a mess? I hope you're thinking about this, because this is just a roadmap. I mean, this is how faith works. It may not be an episode like this, but I'm telling you, faith, the growth and the maturing of faith involves a lot of things that you would never dream. People think that faith just, your faith just increases because you read the Bible. You know, and I know faith cometh by hearing and hearing by the Word of God. But faith must be tried. And that's what we're seeing here. This is the trial of Abraham's faith. I've been trying to figure out how in the world I'm going to preach on the faith of Abraham and the trial of Abraham's faith, because his whole life is the trial of his faith. We can't just go to the altar when he's offering Isaac and say, the trial of his faith. No, his faith's been tried here. Every step of the way, his faith's being tried. And that's how faith gets stronger. And that's how faith matures and becomes firm and settled. The child Isaac grew and was weaned. Now, Isaac, it says the child grew. I'm just telling you it was Isaac because that's who we're talking about. They were in Genesis chapter 21, verses 8 through 13. And was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned, and Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. And by the way, this was the only son Abraham had by Hagar or anybody else as long as Sarah was alive. Didn't happen no more. He didn't go back to Hagar and have more kids and more kids. It wasn't an ongoing thing. It was one time. Don't forget about that. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, which she had been born unto Abraham, mocking. Wherefore she said unto Abraham, Cast out this bondwoman and her son, for this son, the son of this bondwoman, shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abraham's sight because of his son. And God said to Abraham, Let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy bondwoman. In all that Sarah has said unto thee, hearken unto her voice. For in Isaac shall thy seed be called, and also the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation. Of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. That God would do that. So, I don't know if you've ever thought about this or not. But down in verse 14, chapter 21, Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. That was an act of faith. Do you understand that? Abraham was grieved. Sarah said, Get rid of her. Send her away. I can't bear this. She's not going to be here, and that child, that boy, is not going to be heir with my son. Boy, that's ugly. Boy, that's unkind. That's no benevolence there, is there? Don't say that's bad. We all draw back at that. But then God says, do it, Abraham. Send her away. And don't let it grieve you. Abraham puts the water and the bread on Hagar's shoulder and sends him away. And God said, don't let it grieve your heart. What? This is my son. So you see, Abraham's having to exercise some faith here. He's doing what God said to do. But it is bitter. Ain't it? Sometimes when we exercise faith in God, it looks to everybody else like we're being cruel to others and abandon them. Yeah. I mean, it's all not what you see. God promised Abraham he would take care of him. Abraham believed God. It hurt his heart. It grieved him to send his son away. Did he ever see him again? I wonder. Abraham put Hagar and the child in God's hands because God had told him to do so. Yeah. That was a hard thing to do. Don't you know? He's learning to do what God says. No matter how bad it hurts or how unreasonable it may seem, there's something else in his future that's going to try his faith even harder than this. But he's learning the lesson here. He's being prepared for a harder trial down the road. This is the first time Abraham gave up his son. Sent him away. For good. Can't be with me anymore. You don't think God's wise? You don't think God can take the awfulest mess of chaos and confusion and make something good out of it? You don't think God's good at gleaning? He can turn rottenness into pleasantness. I mean, He can take something that's worthless and a mess and destruction and He can use it for good. All things work together for good. To them that love God. To them who are the called according to His purpose. Will that fit Abraham? I mean, that's what he was. And even all this mess, God could take that. And even this bitter pill here to teach Abraham, to instill in him, to exercise real faith and just trust God. And it was very true that Ishmael and Isaac couldn't be heirs together. That's what all the fight is over there now. The Ishmaelites say it's their land. They're the seed of Abraham. That's what they think. And that's the way it is. They are the seed of Abraham. But according to the flesh. But God said from the beginning here that it's in Isaac shall thy seed be. The promise is to the seed of Isaac, which is Israel. And see, that's where all the that's why the President of the United States, that's why the United Nations, that's why all the leaders of Europe, the whole world, all the leaders can't figure out what to do about it over there. That's why it's an issue that's not solvable. And the bunch of goofballs don't even understand what it's all about. From the basis of the whole thing, they don't understand what it's all about. The Jews do. Benjamin Netanyahu stood in the United Nations and said it not long ago. He said this. We are the seed of Abraham. And he meant them too. He was talking about all the enemies of Israel. Boy, that burns them, don't you know? But it's the truth. I think that's amazing. that here 3,500 or so years later, they're standing in the United Nations talking about Abraham. Ishmael was their doing. Isaac was God's doing. They won't go together. They just won't work together. It's either got to be God's doing, God's work, God's hand. That's what our faith looks for. It's what our faith is based upon. Or it's our doings. We either walk by faith or we walk by sight. And Ishmael was their doing. Their plan. Their scheme. To make it happen. And even if it hadn't happened earlier, if they'd have just waited 13 more years. Wonder how it could have been, how different it could have been. Because Ishmael was Abraham's seed, God would make of him a great nation also. Because he is thy seed. I mean, think about that. God put a special importance on Ishmael because of who he belonged to. Yes, sir. You better know that if you've got a godly heritage, God, you know, there's just something special there. Sure, every man must choose for himself and all that, but boy, listen. He's a wild man. He's against every man. Every man's against him. But he's Abraham's seed. Man. We were listening to Reggie Kelly this week talking about Esau was Abraham's grandson. A profane person who knew Abraham. Think about it. God's always true to His Word. He said, I'll bless your seed. Your seed will be as the stars of heaven. Abraham intervened and brought forth a son on his own. And God blessed him anyway. And things will always turn out better if we don't interfere with God's working in our life. So here's the next chapter in Abraham's faith. I mean, his trial of his faith is leaving it alone. When you read what God says, and you know what God's will is, wait upon the Lord. Just wait upon the Lord. Don't try to make it happen. Isn't that what's wrong? So much wrong with all of Christianity today. I mean, What are colleges and all that about? And there's some good things about them. There's some good reasons for them. But basically, what does it all amount to? We're going to make it happen. What are all these big churches? What is all the programs? What's all the gimmicks and all that for? To make it happen. Make it happen. Yeah. I like what I heard him do a few times in some of those messages, you know. No invitation. Just preach and say, that's it, let's go home. See you Wednesday night. You don't hear that very often. I know. Well, that is the cardinal sin among Baptists. You're supposed to preach for 20 minutes and have a 45-minute invitation and sing and plead and tell stories and cry and beg and plead and push and trick and have them raise their hand and stand up and do flip-flops and come to the front and, you know, raise their hand again and look at me. And I mean, you're supposed to do all that, ain't you? No. It's all about getting people to do something. Just trust God. Boy, Abraham is learning here. I hope you're learning from him. I hope you're looking at him and thinking about him and seeing what's going on in his life and in his heart and with his faith. I mean, he is making progress. And I know from the outside looking at it, it just looks terrible. I wonder if it's that way now. I wonder if there's some people now that are really growing in the Lord, but on the outside it looks like it's a mess. I wonder. You reckon that could be? Well, that's one thing that I have found out in living as long as I have and is watching the whole thing. It sure does look that way to me. I mean, it looks to me like the ones that everybody thinks are okay blow out most of the time. And the ones that everybody just counts as hopeless are the ones you'll find years from now. Well, ain't it good that God sees more than we do? It's good that His thoughts are not our thoughts and His ways are far above our ways. That's the context. Well, let's stand. Father, thank You for Your Word, and I pray You'd bless it now to our hearts. Lord, I don't feel like I've made it as clear as I wanted to this morning. We've read about an ugly episode here in Abraham's life and Sarah. And Lord, they stumbled and they really made a mess of things. But in Your kindness and Your providence, You just took the whole mess and turned it into a step up for Abraham and for Sarah. And Lord, I pray You'd help us to apply this in our own life, in our thinking, in our understanding. I pray for these kids that they can understand that this is a journey and we're all on it and we're all facing the attacks of the devil and we all have to struggle with trying to wait when it's hard to wait. Trying to keep from putting our hand to things and making it work. And it's Lord, just help us. Help them to understand that. And Lord, bless Your Word, I pray. Get us home safe. Help us tonight in the service and bless the message, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.